Welcome to, hang on. Welcome to Convention 2023 Pretoria. Woo! Now can you hear us? That's how it's done. It's still a bit flat, but it's okay. It's early in the morning. We're going to pick up speed and energy as we go along. And as you all surrender and get into it. So can you start off, please, with the serenity prayer? Standing, sitting, as you wish. The serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to make the difference.
Thank you.
Hi there, my name is Sandisa and I'm an alcoholic. Still a bit flat, but it's okay, we'll build up to it. I'm also your master of ceremonies. Apparently you can't say mistress of ceremonies because that's a different thing. So for the rest of today, I will be your master of ceremonies. Before we start, please can we just give a round of applause for everyone who's participating in this, the speakers. I haven't even finished. The speakers, the organizers, and the attendees, but now you've already clapped, so we'll keep moving on. So before we start, before we jump into our first meeting, I'm going to do some announcements. First announcement, alcoholics, please behave. Treat this venue like your sponsor's house. No refreshments are allowed in the venue. Let's respect the venue. Varsity has been very kind to provide us with an awesome venue. It really looks lovely from the side. So please can we treat it with dignity and respect, like we were the 12-step program. Second announcement, toilet. Ladies, outside to your left, they're very fancy, I've been in it. Gents, outside to your right, I haven't been in there, but I you know where they are. Yeah. Someone who's been in there will let us know how they're working out. Smokers, if you're still a smoker, no judgment. Give it time. Please, all smoking outside. There's a grass area where we can smoke, but no smoking inside the venue. All smokers should know this by now. Lost and found. If you find anything, please work a program of honesty. Bring it in to myself. Oh, and just to let you know, earlier on, someone brought car keys to me. Like for a very fancy car, they just handed the car keys over to myself and our keys. There was a time when it was the other way around. People were trying to take keys from us. Someone handed in keys, so if you find anything, please hand it in to myself and we'll keep it safe for the person. And more announcements, food. I know it's 9 o'clock in, but most of you already know there's coffee available. I can't pronounce that thing. Rautenbacher? I can't, I know. you can clap for me if you like. Rautenbacher, there's coffee, tea, biscuits, rusks, I checked it out, hot cross buns. And then we have food stalls. We've got Tani Setkoek. Now Tani Setkoek, see that Afrikaans? I see you laughing. I will be taking names. Tani Setkoek. You can pre-order. She would like if we could pre-order, please, if you need anything. Then it takes time to prepare the food. And her speciality is, wait for it, the beige beer and beige steak cook. I love the program of recovery, my friends. Even learned a new language. We also have Kalahari coffees. We have from Shantae's Delight, we have halal meals and vegan meals. We from Ilona, we have Soet Genoeg. You'll find out when you're there. There's flat puppies, popcorn salad. So there's plenty of food available, but we would like if you go get the food after the meeting. More stuff, memorabilia. Al-Anon, our brothers and sisters. say we're not affiliated, but we all know they like our brothers and sisters. Al-Anon has a craft table. It's outside to your right. They have a literature table. For those of you who have children, they just would like you to know they've got a full set of Al-Ateen literature. Al-Ateen is for the teenagers. And they also have banana muffins for Turan. And then meetings. We have Al-Anon meetings. If you go out, down the stairs, and straight through, you'll see the Al-Anon meetings. We have AAC meetings. And on 7th Afrikaans, Prekende Vergadering. Just Afrikaans, really like that, my friend. Afrikaans meeting at 2 o'clock. Although on the front it says German meeting. And then last, what, did I say something? But then, Afrikaans, German, can I say it's all the same? No, I won't. Because, and then last but not least, if you hear the theatre bell, that's tring, 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 and you're outside, that means double clutch your cigarettes, gulp down your coffee, and start moving towards here. Let's try and stop this thing on time. And now that I've given all the announcements, on that note, the theme for this is we are not a glam lot. You're all sitting there looking all serious. There was a time when every single person here at this time on a Friday, Easter, you'd either still be passed out, you'd be praying over a toilet bowl, some of you would still be staggering back home. You know, yeah, that back row there, I can see. They'd still be staggering back home at this time. And look at us. We are sitting on a Friday morning at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, sober. Sober, guys. And stop acting as if God wants us to be. Yeah, you all say it like it's at school. God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. We free, goddammit. Let us fun. Let's enjoy the meeting. Let's jump into it. And I will be handing over to our chairperson, Wally, who will be taking you through the first meeting. But before we start off, you know, now that we've kind of been all serious and stuff, remember when we used to drink tequilas in bars and we made noise? With the same energy, can we give one round of applause? Let's make some noise. Yeah. Thank you.
Good morning, beautiful family. My name is Wally and I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'm from the Vera Park group, and it is by the grace of God that I'm still alive here today. And hence, I feel honored and fortunate to chair the first session of Convention 2023. I'm going to request Mr. Shaba to read a portion of Chapter 5, How It Works.
Hi everyone, my name is Masa Chawa, I'm an alcoholic, and this is how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunate. They are not at fault, they seem to have been born that way. They are naturally capable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous and honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ushered protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which I suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. So through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our days. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C. That God could and would if He were thought.
Thank you very much, Master Chava. Yeah, it was suggested that I follow a script. Because you know, us as alcoholics, if they say right, I will take a left. Let's continue. I'm going to read a part of the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorse nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, as indicated, I'm chairing the session and the topic for the session is when the fun stopped. Now, yes, just by way of introduction, it was not fun anymore. You know, since I have realized that I have a threefold disease, which is body, mind and spirit, my life was unmanageable. I have caused so much harm to the people that I love the most. You know, that's my family. And I will stand in front of my family and I will promise them that I'm going to stop and I'm going to control my drinking. How I did not comprehend how powerful, baffling and cunning alcohol is. And it is agreed that a mental obsession is part of my disease, which says it is okay to take the first drink. And it's the first drink that triggers the phenomenon of craving. And for a long time, my life was unmanageable, or so I thought it was unmanageable of all the crazy insane things I did while drinking, like the car accidents, hurting people when I did not mean it, etc. Now I cannot negate these factors. It played a role, but these things can only be regarded as the external factors. However, those things are not the insanity that the big book talks about, or the factors that made my life actually unmanageable. I must look inward. The inward unmanageability of my life, and here I'm referring to the restlessness, the irritability, and the discontentment. Now page 64 simply refers to this inward unmanageability as the spiritual malady. And our book promises us that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And page 25 tells us there is a solution, and that solution is a spiritual solution. Therefore, I need to seek a power greater than myself, and I don't have to rely on my own understanding. And furthermore, I need to take a course of action, which is referred to as the 12 steps of recovery. Now, ladies and gentlemen, or fellows, I'm going to introduce the panel now. Our first speaker will be Christelle. She's from Big Book. Sue. Our next speaker thereafter is from the Edenvale Lunchtime Group. Utz is from the Fellowship of the Spirit, and then Kevin from St. Francis. Now they will speak in that order for a maximum of 20 minutes. And I'm going to time you, so when I press the button, it will flicker here and it will indicate that you have 5 minutes left. And thereafter, there will be another flashing light to say your time is up. I will then just do a brief summary, and then also as a token of appreciation, you will receive your gift. And then if there's any other announcement, I will give them to the MC, and then we will close with the serenity prayer. So, fellows, let's give a round of applause for our first speaker, Christelle.
Morning everybody, I'm Christelle and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is the 24th of September 2022. So as you guys all know, the theme of this year's convention is We Are Not a Glum Lock, and the theme for this meeting is When the Fun Stops. So what is the definition of fun? Providing entertainment, amusement or enjoyment. So now I can say I'm not providing the entertainment anymore, so because I'm also enjoying the fun and the entertainment. I'm a 42-year-old alcoholic who started looking for the solution in alcohol. I had a normal childhood. My dad was a recovering alcoholic, so he went into rehab when I was 5 years old. He never touched alcohol again, and he lived a sober life until the day that he died. I had my first taste of alcohol at the same varsity that we are here today. So, and I remember it was at the radio station at 6 FM. I was 19 years old, and I got my first taste of a glass of white wine. Oh my gosh, I stood in the shower that evening and I thought to myself, never will I drink again. Yes, that's what I thought. I've learned now, while doing my step work, that I'm not only selfish, but also people-pleasing. So I drank to fit in, and then I also started smoking. So my husband hated that, so I thought, okay, let me hide that. So I lied to him about the smoking, but drinking was fun, so I only drank at home. I cannot recall when it got the better of me, but my husband told me as I started my journey that he actually went to see a psychiatrist already 12 years ago. Because of my dad and because he was an alcoholic, obviously what I did the Google searches. I remember going through the list, 666 shop, I can still drink, I'm not an alcoholic. About a year ago, my husband really got tired of me being drunk, falling over everything, and even falling over my own kids at home. So he called an intervention, and because he didn't want me to know about it, of course he did it on my daughter's 16 years birthday. So of course I don't remember much of that evening because I was the fun of the party at the 16 year birthday. So that Sunday, full of remorse, and just to get everybody off my back, I thought it would be a good idea to reach out to the AA, and so I did. After my first meeting, I thought, yes, this is going to be easy. Just attend meetings, read a book, and then I should be cured. Ha, that's when the fun really started. So now, of course, my family was happy, but because I wasn't working the program, I was still unhappy in myself. So I bullshitted because that's one of my defects, and I'm really good at it. So what I started doing is I said to my husband, you know what, this AA thing is fine, we allowed to drink non-alcoholic wine. So I started with the non-alcoholic wine, didn't get the kick, so I started with white wine because guess what, over the years I realized that I can drink a lot, I've got a very strong liver, so I started with the white wine. So, and I thought, of course, it's the red wine, I'm not really an alcoholic, it's absolutely the red wine's fault. So, yeah, what happened? I remember I had a meeting, so I wasn't depressed that day. It was an exceptionally good and joyous day for me. So I started, of course, the white wine. So one bottle, two bottles, and that evening my husband had to come and fetch me at the nail salon. So I passed out there. Of course, yeah, over the couple of months he's learned to track me. So he found me there and I was so angry because I did nothing wrong. So that evening I drove in my drunkenness. It's just amazing that I didn't drive into someone else and that I didn't kill someone that evening. But I did something far worse. I put my family at risk that evening because I passed out alongside the road. Some strangers had to take me home. So we are forced out, can I just tell you guys, just in front of my own house. So it was my neighbor. So now I also know my neighbors very well. So they came into my house, and because I chased my husband away that evening, they had to come in, they had to make sure that they can put me into bed, and they had to look after my children that evening. So that's when I realized that I couldn't go on anymore. So that next morning I sent a message on our Ladies Fellowship group. Of course, very remorseful. So, and I asked for forgiveness and I went back to the AA. So that is also when I realized that my life was unmanageable and I needed to do something different. I needed to start working the program, and I needed to go on this journey, and I wanted to have what the other fellows had when I first started in the AA. So, of course, I got to my step four, and it looked easy, I'm still on my step four, moving over to step five. So last week Thursday, I was very resentful towards my own sponsor because how could she say that I can't have only five resentments? So I was still trying to hide away from it, still trying to bullshit my way. So, and that's where I actually, yet again started working my journey. So, and I just wanted to read you guys something today. I'm just checking for this light. So, I got to acceptance. So I'm just going to read out of the fellowship collection. So it's the 30 years of recovery shares. So, and this around acceptance has really meant a lot to me. The 12 steps about accepting. Accepting that we are powerless. Accepting that we have defects and accepting that a higher power could help us. I had to accept that stopping drinking and staying stopped were two different things. I had to accept the unthinkable, that I had character defects. This was frightening because I thought that if I got rid of the character defects, there would be nothing left of me. Little did I realize that I could get rid of these defects, what would be left would be my character that was God-given and essentially good. Chapter 5 of the Big Book says, if you want what we have. At first I didn't know if I wanted what they had. Besides, not drinking. I thought I could be happy with what I had. Note the word I is used 3 times in this sentence. I was not drinking, but was far from happy. I had to ask myself, what did recovering alcoholics actually have? I realized and had to accept that they did have the things that I really wanted and needed. Besides, not drinking and having to live with the horrible consequence thereof, they had an inner peace, a serenity. They had self-respect without pride. They could face life on life's terms. They had honesty and humility. They found fulfillment in helping others, and they had found a faith in a higher power. I had none of these things. I had to accept that 2 of the things most lacking in my life were humility and honesty. Some of my worst qualities were pride, arrogance, and self-centeredness. To a large part of my life consisted of lies, pretense, self-gratification, and manipulation. It was a life run on self-will, resulting in fear and loneliness. What a relief to accept that it's so much more comfortable without these things. I do not have to pretend or try to impress people or be the center of attention. I have nothing to hide. I no longer have to know better or know more. I have come to accept that there is a real me after all. If I'm trying to do the right thing, I can honestly say what other people think about me or say about me has nothing to do with me. I accept that I am no better or worse than anyone else. I do not have to convince myself or others that the program is working for me or working better for me than others. The proof is that I hadn't had a drink today and I feel better about myself, and other people can see the change. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sarita, but I changed that to Sue in 2005, and I am an alcoholic, no matter what my name is. So, fun. I was thinking, when did my fun stop? And it stopped long ago, but then in the same breath, not so long ago. I had my first drink when I was in Standard 9. And it was a nice feeling. I remember I said to my mom, I can't feel my teeth. She was so upset. And then I remember my mom saying, I'm going to be an alcoholic just like my dad. But my dad wasn't an alcoholic. He was just unhappily married to my mother. As alcohol took over my life, I wasn't aware of it. I just knew one thing, and that was to drink. Whether it was for fun, whether it was to get attention. Eventually it became an attention-seeking device or substance for me. I had to be the center of attention. I had to sometimes be rude just to be part of the conversation, because it always felt like I don't fit in. But going get stuff to go drinking. I lost the privilege of being a mother. And my daughter's here today. And I hated life. That's when the fun stopped for me. She was 3 years old, and I just couldn't cope. Never mind that I found the most amazing husband in the world, who saw everything in me that I couldn't. And it took me years and years until a year ago. I used to get up in the mornings at 6 o'clock when I went to make coffee, and I'd drink neat moonshine for breakfast. And then when I bring his coffee and he said, "You've been drinking," I said, "Don't be silly, who drinks at 6 o'clock in the morning?" But I did. And that's all I knew. I was so tired of planning where my next drink was going to come from, because no one wanted me to drink. And I didn't get that. I thought, what's wrong with it? Drinking makes me happy. Drinking just fills the hurt that I'm going through that I can't cope with. And on the 4th of January 2022, my husband said to me, "I'm not going to divorce you, but you can drink yourself to death now, and I want my own life." And I thank John, he's also here today, that he saw something in me that I couldn't see. That he saw me through all my drunkenness, all my lies, all my deceit, all my throwing the dogs bigger and hiding the rest for the next day. That he gave me so many chances, and that he gave me this one last chance. So, I've got my fellowship here in the front, and they've been my biggest support. I didn't know that people existed that could accept me for me. And I was broken, and I just couldn't see myself standing here today saying, today, short of 11 days of a year and 3 months sober. Coming into the AA fellowship has changed my life in a way that I never thought would be possible. The biggest lesson I've learned of being part of this wonderful fellowship is that I can just be me. And that finally I found a place where I belong, where I'm accepted and never judged. Because I did try and test when I joined AA, I thought, okay, I'm going to AA now, so no one's going to think I'm going to drink. And my husband phoned and said, "Have you been drinking?" I said, "No, I'm in AA." And I did it twice. So the second time he said, "That's it, I told you what's going to happen." And then my very good friend, who was my first contact with AA, Vilma, she begged him and said, "Please don't. You've put up with so much, just give her another chance." And I'll ever be ever grateful for that, because he did give me another chance. And here I am today, saying the best thing that happened in my life is that I don't have to lie anymore. I can look at myself in the mirror and I can say, I'm okay. For the first time in my life, I actually like myself. I like what I see in the mirror. I know that I was meant to be a better person, and I can't do that with alcohol. Alcohol came into my life, and at the time I didn't know how bad. It hurt people around me, the lies, the promises, over and over, broken record. I mean, I had no self-respect. I threw my name away when I got drunk, but I thought it was funny. I'd sit in pubs and people would laugh, but they wouldn't laugh with me, they'd be laughing at me. And I realized now, if I hadn't come into this fellowship, I would have been on the streets or dead. I'm ever so grateful that I've learned to accept that I am an alcoholic. When I came into the fellowship, I was very embarrassed, because besides being a woman, I was a mother. And I have to share this with you. My daughter came to one of my other shares, and one of my other friends said to her, "Your mom's got so many fears of the trauma she put you through, and that you'll be disappointed." And all my daughter said was, "My mom's sober now." They say, if you want what we have, I sometimes wish I could bottle all my feelings of excitement for this program and give it away. Because until you actually experience it, you can't appreciate it. It's life-changing. And it's all for free. You just have to work it. If you want it, work it. And we're all worth it. When I was 4 months sober, I spent a weekend with my friend Vilma. And there's a lady called Nightbird, and she was an inspiration to me. She's 30 years old. She goes by an alias name also. Her name is Jane, but she goes by Nightbird. That's why my career time she comes in. And she said, you can't wait for life to not be hard anymore until you choose to be happy. And that was so profound in my faith, that who am I? Being an alcoholic, and I've got the tools to want to just go back, want to just give up and think that it's just going to be for a while and then I can move and go back to who I was. I never, ever, ever want to be that old drunk too. She was an embarrassment. People didn't come around anymore and I didn't see it. And it was because they didn't want to be around me. Never in my life have I had so many friends that they actually come and want to spend time with me. You don't get that in the outside world. You get people in the outside world, yes. But the fellowship are a group of people who are exactly like me, and they get me. And I've never had that in my life. I want to thank you all for giving me this opportunity to speak today, because I stand today and I tell you, if you work this and you want it with all your heart, God's given me another chance, and He's putting me back together in front of the people that broke me down. And I'm a better person for it, because I'm sober. Thank you.
I'm always messing with people stuff. Morning everybody, my name is Uso, I'm an alcoholic. I'm terrible, man.
I love you.
I love you too, man. Oh man. You know what Frank told me that I'm going to be doing this on my car? Are you sure? Did you guys choose the right guy? Are you considering like... Yo, I just went blank. But I want to thank the previous speakers and everybody that's doing services to put this together. This is actually a really beautiful event. And that just adds to my pressure, right? Because like my ego wants me to like say some really cool stuff, you know? And then everybody can just like automatically recover. Yeah. And my friend Ed there at the back, the real one, he can just come and sit in the front to catch the Holy Ghost. Yeah. But you know, like I'm taking the other to the table, I have to keep reminding myself that this is not about me. For some reason in 2017, July 17, higher power source said that I can actually like consume my last drink and put me on the journey of recovery. And you know what? The life I've been living up until that point, let's say the last few years of it, drinking wasn't fun, it was a necessity. You know, while you were talking about it, restless spiritual and discontent. You know, a perfect example, like, I always use this in my series, right? Like, as soon as I found out that something about alcohol straightens out my knock knee, you know, and you need to get that feeling every day. Something about alcohol makes me dance, you know. Something about alcohol makes me collect. You know, I can go to that hot supermodel in the club and be like, you me, you're like, you know. You know? Don't you know who I am, you know? And it was fun, like, it was fun because it was helping me do things which I couldn't do for myself. But, I mean, this is a very addictive substance, and I didn't know that it would consume my entire soul, and it would affect every single thing that, every single thing that I associate or even like every space I take part in. And in the end, like, you know, one concept that I remember is like, this can't be my life. You know, this can't be my life. Who had that one? And the rabbit hole himself and sleeping under a carpet, like, this can't be my life. You know, or like doing the evictions and doing the homeless thing and this can't be my life, you know. Completely confused, but like I'm the type of alcoholic that at that point I need to wake up in the morning and I need to get into my body. Because life in the end was terrible, right? You know? I mean, like I can count to like the amount of unmanageability, and even when I look back on it now, I'm like, anything would have been better than this, than being sober through all of that, you know? But then I'm the type of alcoholic to talk about in the book, right? I'm surrendering. It's not by my choice, you know. For some reason, I just found myself in a situation where, I can't fight this one anymore. I can't fight this one, and I remember reaching out to a friend and myself that I didn't believe in or understand. It only ever applied when there were police involved, you know. God, please let them find the alcohol in the car. I'm being very tired. I used to negotiate with God. You know, and then once I get past that roadblock, I'm like, try to catch me right in very day. Try to catch me right in very day. Yeah. So at that moment when it's like, this comes to my life, like, it doesn't make sense to me either. And I'm introduced to these steps. Look, I think I just explained that the fun had stopped. You know, and I came into these rooms and I started hearing people tell me stories about like their crises and their unmanageability and their powerlessness over alcohol, you know. And they started telling me about the miracles that happened as soon as they started applying their lives to these deaths, you know, and turning their will and their life over to the care of God. You know, my first conception was a group of drunks, because it's almost like what you guys are saying when you were speaking directly to me, to my experience. And you explain the conditions in words that I didn't even have. For example, powerlessness. Who used that word before coming here? Unmanageability. My job is to manage. I gotta get all the power. I'm going in the air. I got the power. You know? And I get here like, these people must be cooked, but then I start hearing them say, I'm 9 months sober, you know? And I start hearing them say, I'm 1 year sober, and then there was a guy who's like 30 years sober, and I'm like, no, this old man must be lying. Yeah. That guy's lying, you know, he doesn't look sober, he looks pissed off. But like it's all that experience that kept me in despair, because for some reason something said to me, that could happen for me. You know, what I had, there was nothing left to keep. That could happen for me. You know? And I don't know, like ever since then, even through the consequences, I mean some of them like it just lingered for years and years and years, you know. But as soon as I just accepted, you know, page 417, Mama Lynn likes to call it Flight 417. Page 4 and 7, I just accepted to the answer like, okay, this is the stuff that you can't undo about your drinking. These are the consequences that actually have nothing to do with you when it comes to like, fixing. In fact, my only amendment there is to stay sober. You know? And one day I get a phone call from the magistrate to say that I get custody of my son back. You know? You know? And you know, the stuff that I go through that couldn't be even undone, that couldn't be undone about me and my dad's relationship. You know, the other day my dad explained a balloon payment to me. You're laughing because you know I shouldn't go for the balloon, right? I thought it was for the airbag, you know what I mean? I've never bought a car, like, this is some new stuff going on in my life, you know? And my dad's like, this to be a dad. And I get to be a son, you know. And by the way, I'm a father, so like, whatever opportunities I missed of learning from my dad, I get that now, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm telling you now, like, my knocking, I don't care, guys, I wore shorts today. Except this is awesome. These are not my knockies, these are God's knockies, okay? And they're meant to put me in these steps, you know? They keep me in these steps. One day at a time, one step at a time. So if there's anybody new, Except for my man, Eddie. I see you. I saw you hiding in the back. But I'll talk about the guys that just congregated there. Like the denial aisle. Please. Come to the front. Come join us. You know, this space is very broad. Spacious. You know? And even that old guy that looks really pissed off, he's actually a very lovable guy. You know? Come down. Come join us and stick around. The worst that ever happened to me was actually showing up in Alcoholics Anonymous. The greatest gift that's ever happened to me was showing up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And every day I wake up and I'm like, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think I have anything more to say. And why you didn't hit through the button. So I'll stop there. Thank you, guys.
May the words of my lips and the meditations of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen.
Amen.
You're probably thinking he's a religious crackpot. Well, I'm not. But I do believe in a God that saved me from a miserable and terrible drunken death. My name is Kevin and I'm an alcoholic. So there was a family of Headleys, Mr. and Mrs. Headley. Mr. and Mrs. Head. And they had a little boy called Headley. Now when Headley was born, he was just a head. He didn't have a body at all. And you can imagine there were certain challenges as he went through life. Like he wasn't very good at rugby or tennis. But he did manage to go to school, and eventually when he was 18 years of age, his dad decided that he would take him for his first beer. So they went down to the local pub, and he put Headley on the bar counter and he fed Headley his first beer. And as he took that first sip, so suddenly a body just shot out from the head. And he took another sip and his little arms shot out. He took another sip and his little legs shot out. And Headley was so excited, he jumped up and down, and he ran around. He ran straight out the door and he was hit by a truck. Boom! And one of the old drunks in the corner turned to his mate and said, he should have quit while he was still ahead. So normally in these discussions we talk about what it was like, what it's like now and what happens in the interim between the two, but I like to turn things upside down because I'm an alcoholic and we like to do things back to front, well I do anyway. And so I'll tell you what it's like now. I am happily married, been married to the same woman for 39 years. I have... you should clap for her, honestly. We have four beautiful children. They absolutely adore their father. I've got a great job here in Victoria. I get paid a good salary. We live in a very, very beautiful big house, which we don't own, but we don't pay for either. That's another story. And we've got a massive garden, and physically I'm fit, psychologically I'm fucked. I'm a bit messed up. I'm just like the rest of us, aren't I? So everything is great. I bumped into an old school friend of mine earlier and he said no war stories. So I said, well, that's the only reason we come to these meetings, isn't it? To see other war stories. So let me tell you what it was like. And I've told you what it's like now, but I can assure you that some years back I was in a really, really dark place. An incredibly dark place. I was broken, I was depressed, I was filled with fear, and my life was an absolute disaster. So my first drunk, when I drank to pass that point, I was pretty young, I was 10 years of age. And then at the age of 12, a good friend of mine, my best friend at the time, his name is Michael, and he and I used to get drunk every Thursday when my mom went to Cub Scouts. We would go, my dad had a bar, and he always built a bar in whichever house we went into, and we would take a glass each and we would get whiskey, brandy, cane, vodka, run, and then down it, and then black out and run around like crazy things. This was at the tender age of 12, and I must just put a qualifier on my father and my mother. They weren't alcoholics, but they did drink every day. But my dad would come home from work and he would have two or three single whiskies, and that was it. An alcoholic can't do that. Certainly not this alcoholic. If you give me two or three whiskies, that bottle's in trouble. Then around the age of 16, I was very involved in the Boy Scouts, which kind of saved me for a number of years, because I was busy on weekends and out hiking and scout camping and stuff like that. I really enjoyed that. But occasionally I'd be at home in Johannesburg and my mates would invite me to a house party or down to the local country club where we used to get drunk and smoke grass and stuff like that. And I remember I was always the guy that was trying to win people's approval. And I remember walking into this one house and a friend of mine, Richard, had a bottle of cane and he passed it to me and I drank a third of it just like that. Boom. And then promptly blacked out and passed out. My father fetched me late and asked me if I'd been in a fist fight, just because of my state that I was in. I joined the Navy at 17 and I thought this is it. You know, they talk about a drunken sailor, that is so true. I was at home. I absolutely loved my Navy days. Became a student for a while. Student days were pretty heavy. But before that I also worked for 3 years. I had lots of cash. Spent 2 to 3 days nights at least in Hillbrow at the old Bella Napoli, for those of you that remember Hillbrow in those days. And yeah, I was drinking a lot, to the extent that my father called me in one day and said, "Son, I think you drink too much. I think you should rather drink at home a bit more." But I didn't see the warning lights. I carried on. Got married at a young age of 24, and just like I'd been taught in the household that I grew up about having a drink every day, I had a drink every day. My drinking career lasted 26 years. 13 years of heavy drinking and 13 years of alcoholic drinking. And the theme of the talk today is about when did the fun stop? Well, the fun stopped at about the age of 30. So I would, I joined a young men's organization in my late 20s, and it was fun. It was a huge amount of fun. We used to raise money for charity, but we always did it first. It was great times. We had a great time doing what we did. And then at about the age of 30, I went to what is called the Bathurst Big Fry, or Bathurst Big Bash, which is down in the Eastern Cape. And it's a big student job. And there's lots of meat, they have these spit fries, and there's lots of drinking. And I remember being there with my two best mates, Jeff and Andrew at the time. And they turned around and they said, "You know, Kev, we're getting too old for this." And I like looked at them with amazement. And they slowed down and I changed gears. And they continued to drink. And as I said earlier, that was the invisible line that I had then gone over. And things just started getting worse and worse. We talk about a progressive disease. You sure as hell believe it. It went down and down and down. And I started doing things with people that I shouldn't have been with, doing things that I shouldn't have been doing, in places that I shouldn't have been in, and it just got worse and worse. And I'll just give you one or two examples. The one time I had a fist fight in the streets in a really bad part of town. I got thrown into the, we're really good when we just try and box. So I was trying to box and they beat the crap out of me and threw me into the gutter. And I ended up with a tiny little cut on my arm. And the next day I couldn't move my arm. I didn't think much about it, I just carried on drinking. But the following day I was in such agony I had to go to the doctor. And I ended up in hospital on a drip for 5 days with what is called cellulitis, which is a bacterial infection of the lymphatic system, which can be serious. I could have lost my arm, but that didn't stop me. What did stop me was when I was in another fight, which I don't remember a thing of, but my wife found me at about 4 o'clock in the morning, half in, half out of a vehicle. There's blood all over me. I had this uncanny thing that I used to love to kiss the pavement with my eyebrow. And it just bursts open and it makes such a mess. It really, it's more scary for other people because they see it. You know, I don't see it unless I look in the mirror. And so my poor wife found me like that. Whenever she woke up, she had packed the kids up, she had left. And I spoke to the doctor, and the doctor said to me, I think you might have a drinking problem. I was about 36 years of age. And he said, if you want to prove that you're not an alcoholic, why don't you try and quit drinking for a year? I thought, sure, I'll do that. I can do that. And so proceeded to quit drinking for a period that lasted for 5 months. Those 5 months were the most miserable time in my entire life. Any of you who have been a dry drunk before, you'll know what I'm talking about. I remember going up to Kruger National Park on holiday and watching other people braai and drink beer, and there was me trying to braai without a beer. I mean, I couldn't imagine doing anything without a beer, not just braaiing. My whole life revolved around alcohol. I was either drinking or I was thinking of drinking. And then a big thing happened. We moved to, up to Pretoria, and my wife was involved in a fatal accident, not for her, but for the other person. She crossed over a road, and a gent went across the barrier line, popped a wheelie and hit into the side of her car with such force that it exploded, all the windows exploded, the car was buckled in half, his heart exploded on impact apparently. And even in those days I used to pray every day. And I believe there was a miracle that had happened there, because she got out of the car, she didn't have a single scratch on her body, no whiplash, no bruises, nothing. But something had happened inside her which was far worse than that, was that she had obviously this huge amount of stress that had happened to her. And so she started seeing a psychologist. And after about 6 months he said to her, you know, we've worked through this PTSD and you're through that. But there's something that you're not telling me about that is far worse than what you've been through. She said, yes, my husband's an alcoholic, but he won't admit it, and he's destroying our lives, and he's destroying the lives of our children. So that psychologist gave me a call, and he said to me, do you know that your drinking is worse than somebody dying to your wife? And that was like a bucket of cold water over the top of my head. Before that I'd never really realized it. I don't know why, I just denied it, this massive amount of denial in my life. But I had, and he said, I've got a psychologist friend that I suggest you go and talk to, which I did. And we started working through this thing called alcoholism. But I had one more big, serious crunch left in me. Went out to Durban on business, and went into a 4-day blackout, where I did things with people that I shouldn't have been with, in places I shouldn't have been in, and I came back to Johannesburg minus my watch, my wallet, my laptop and my cell phone, and thank God I came back with my life, but that's about all I had. And on the Monday morning I was on the red carpet. The company that I'd been with for 19 years wanted to fire me. My wife wanted a divorce, or at least she was talking about it. And my children were scared of me, those same beautiful, loving children that I told you about. They didn't know who was going to wake up in the morning, what sort of animal was going to get out of bed. It was certainly my rock bottom. I didn't believe that I could go any deeper, but I did. I was to go a bit deeper, but that was certainly the worst scenario that I've ever found myself in. So I was talking to my psychologist about this, and he said to me, maybe you should go into a psychiatric hospital. So I went to quite a famous one here in Pretoria for 3 weeks. And while I was in hospital, they allowed me to keep my laptop. Of course, you know I can manipulate anything. I told them I was studying, which was true. So they let me keep my laptop. And then I'd meet with a psychologist, psychiatrist and a counselor every day. And they would talk about things like depression, bipolar, alcoholism, you name it, and I would look it up in the evening, and then the next day I'd go and I'd show them how wise I was, and you know, I'd tell them, wow, you know, this is what depression is. And of course they went stupid, and they said to me, that's great, Kevin, you've studied up on this, but what you really need to do is you need to internalize it. And I said, but how do I do that? And the psychologist said, I don't know, but you sure as hell better find out how to do it. And it was only in these rooms that I eventually came to understand on how to internalize things. You see, trying to think my way through this disease is impossible. I tried. My dad was a very dominant person in my life. And I can still hear him saying, whenever something was tough or difficult, he would say, come on my boy, put your shoulders to the wheel, chin up, shoulders back, you can do this. And so I try to think my way through alcoholism. But it's not like that, because as we learn in step one, it's exactly the opposite. We can't beat this thing called alcoholism. We have to totally surrender. We do the opposite of fighting. We quit. And it's in the quitting that we beat this thing, that we win. So I went to the psychiatric hospital, I came out, I tried non-alcoholic booze. Somebody was talking earlier about non-alcoholic wine. I actually read up on it recently. Do you know that it is impossible to make non-alcoholic beer? All non-alcoholic beer has alcohol in it. It's 0.05 or something percent, but it still has alcohol in it. And I used to drink that stuff, gulping it down, and my body was screaming to me, get the real stuff, don't mess with it. And I would drink gallons of it, and nothing happened, but my body was saying, come on, get the real stuff. And eventually I had to surrender to that. And so I'd buy a six-pack of non-alcoholic beer and a crate of the real stuff. And then I'd hide it in the garage. And it was funny, you know, I took up woodworking all of a sudden. And I'd be, you know, working in the garage. And my wife would like, what is happening in the garage? Now, I even used to try and cover the smell. I would get a rag and pour thinners on it and put it in the corner. And then I would smoke as well, which was like mad. And how didn't burn the place down, I don't know. And eventually, you know, I was off then again to a real rehab this time, was introduced to the big book, was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and suddenly my life started changing. I started going to AA meetings, and I came out of rehab, and 3 months into my sobriety, I had a relapse. I was in Australia, and somebody offered me a beer, and I thought, you know, here I am, don't know how many thousand kilometers from home, I don't know a single person on this continent, nobody's going to know. And off I went again, and I was drunk again. Came back and started going to meetings again. Sometimes I went to meetings drunk. And the thing that happened to me was that I was doing meetings, but there was something that was missing. And the thing that was missing was that I didn't have a sponsor. Because you see, there were things in my life that had happened that nobody should ever find out about. They were so dirty and disgusting that even I couldn't face the fact that I'd done them, let alone share them with another person. But one night at Moraletto, which is a great group, and I see a lot of them here, big shout out for Moraletto. There we go. I went to this meeting and I was drunk, and at least I knew to keep your mouth shut when you drank. And eventually I couldn't actually hear what the person was saying, even though it was a small room. And I went like this time out, and I went outside for a cigarette. And this larger-than-life character came out. He's a huge man, and he's got a bigger heart than even his massive size. And he came and he hugged me. He held me in a bear hug, and I just cried like a baby. And he said to me, you know what you need? You need to get a sponsor, and you need to do the steps. And within a week, I found myself a sponsor, and I started doing the steps. And that's when the miracle started happening in my life. You know, I said to you earlier that I always believed in God, and that I used to go to church regularly, like as in every Sunday. But I used to pray to God, and there was the problem was, is that there was no connection. There's this conduit between us and God, and that conduit was full of all the stuff and all the garbage that I packed in there over 26 years of drinking. Things that were bad and ugly and shameful, and things that I didn't want to face. And as I did the steps, so I started chiseling away the inside of that conduit, so that today, ladies and gentlemen, I now have a relationship and an open connection between the God of my understanding and this person that I am at the moment. I remember my sponsor saying to me, why don't you take it, when we did steps 1, 2, and 3, basically, why don't you take the concept that you have of God and put it on the mantelpiece? Do the program and see what happens. And I did exactly that. I took the God of the Anglican Church, and I've got nothing against the Anglican Church, I'm still a staunch Anglican, and I put it up on the mantelpiece, and I did the program, exactly as it's laid out in the big book. at step one, I admitted my powerlessness of alcoholism and that my life was an absolute disaster. And I came to believe in the power of grace in myself. And then step three was critically important, because that's when I gave my life over to the power, of grace in myself. My will and my life I gave to and continue to give to this higher power that I have. Step four, I took an inventory. I shared this with my sponsor and with God, and more importantly, I shared it with myself. For the first time, I could take a mirror and actually look at heaven and see that I'm actually not, in many ways, I'm not as bad as I think I am. And if I do something about my past and I heal the past, I can actually be an outstanding member of society. Six and seven, I've given it over to God. Eight, I make a list of all the people I've harmed. Nine, I go out and make amends. There were over 100 people that I had to go and make amends to. It took me 11 months. Is it over? No. I still hurt people. That's why step 10 is so important. Because when I do a daily inventory, I can see who have I harmed, who do I owe forgiveness. And I try and do that as quickly as possible, because the longer I hold on to those resentments, the sicker I get and the more difficult the amend is to make. Do I pray and meditate? You better believe it. Every day. Sometimes it goes well, sometimes not so good, but I still do it every single day. And then of course one of the most important steps is the last step, and that is about doing service and handing it over. There's a great author, his name is Richard Rohr, and he talks about in step one, he agrees with, that if you want to win, you have to quit. And the step 12 one is that if you really want something, you should give it away. And the more, what I've learned is the more you give it away, the more you get back. The more you give it away, the more you get back. So I see, in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, and I always like to say that about 20 minutes before I finish talking. And if you say it, often enough, you actually see people's attention. Okay? And in conclusion, you should try it, it works. See, you're all awake. Now, in conclusion, really, a big thank you to the organizers, and thank you for inviting me to come and talk. But in conclusion, coming back to where I started, I have this incredible life. I am happy, joyous, and free today. My depression is under control. My anxiety is under control. Has it disappeared? No. I still have a sponsor. I still have a psychologist. I still have a psychiatrist. I still take tablets for my disease, my other disease. And because I go to meetings and I try and do service, I am free, absolutely free today. And this program works. All you have to do is work it. Thank you.
Fellas, can you give them another round of applause? Okay, I just want to thank our panel for amazing share. And I can relate to almost all of your shares, because there you spoke about the damage that we have caused, the unmanageability, and the defects of character, the selfishness, self-centeredness, and that inconsiderateness. Yes, Sue, you also spoke about you wanted attention all the time. I remember with myself, I used to be, you know, everything revolved around worry. And that hole in the soul, you know, I wanted to, yeah, I actually used the wrong spirit, you know, to try and fill that hole. Yeah, and Utsu spoke about the powerlessness. Our dilemma was actually power, no? The unmanageability, the irritable restlessness and discontent. And yeah, Kevin, the people, you know, I also know your family. And my children used to avoid me. You know, they said, no, he's under the weather. I'm not going to him. And but at the end of the day, they said through adversity our lives become better. And my life has changed for the better. And what I like about the paradox of this program, in order to keep it, I have to give it away. So guys, we thank you again. I think you've all kept it in your allotted time, the 20 minutes. I didn't have to press the lights. Thank you for that. And as a token of appreciation, I'm going to give you those medallions, and please wear it so that people can see those are the speakers, and if they want to engage, they can go to you at any time. So, any announcements from our MC before we close the meeting with a serenity prayer?
That's me. I'm back. I also want to play. Like after listening to everyone... Oh, shut the fuck. As I was saying, I also want to play after hearing everyone share. First of all, Christelle was the first one who saw this meeting, so you've opened the door. Thank you. Kevin stepped up with the F word, thank you. Now then, now some of us can speak freely. Whew. I was trying to be all dignified and grateful and whatnot. It was very hard, I must tell you. But before we're going to finish up, we're going to go have a tea break, coffee, all of that stuff. When you hear the bell going tring, 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 you double clutch, you gulp down your coffee, you come back here. Yeah. And then I just wanted to say, first of all, I don't know what a balloon payment is either. But you know what? I got God on my side, I don't care. When I need to learn that stuff, I'll learn it. And I didn't know you could drink it in your salon. Too late now, but thanks for that, Christoph. And I love it when people, I was like, you can't say that about your mother. Is your mother here? How are they? You spoke up. You just tell it like it is. I wanted to say, no, it's awesome when the fun stopped. Yeah. I was just thinking, listening to everyone share. Now, I remember what it used to be like. I didn't even realize the fun was over. Who remembers waking up like this, right? I'd wake up, and it'd be like, where am I? Yep, and then if it's like, ooh, I'm at home, you're like, ooh, things are good. And then the second checklist is the bed dry. Yeah. Okay, I'm not alone. The bed is dry. Already you're feeling like a winner in life. The third checklist for some of us, am I alone? When you check it out, it's like, oh, if you're alone, you're like, oh. If there's something there, then you're like, oh, something. Oh, God. What is it? What is it? If it's a man, dear God, I'm going to get kicked out of the basement for Rory. If it's a woman, I'm in a relationship. And then came the, I'm sure most of us did this one, the vomiting. You liars! You are such liars, acting like you just got drunk and then you woke up and then the vomiting. We do the vomiting. I won't do the vomiting, but it gets me into trouble. This is convention. And then we had to go out and check if their car was there. You know how I woke up today? Woke up? Well, first of all, I was stressing it. I have to be up at 5 because we have to be here like at 7. I didn't make 7. Wake up. Just, who woke up and did the daily reading today? Read the daily reading. Yeah? Read some big book. Prayed? No! No! People that are newcomers in this fucking room, start working a program. Yeah. Put this on brain meditation. Now we've got quality problems. We do that. And you know what we worry about? I don't even worry about petrol now because God's so good, like I've got a full tank of petrol. Just waiting to be used. Do I get to the venue on time? I need to get to the venue on time. These are my thoughts now. Now if I wake up and there's someone next to me, I know who it is. I put them there. Like people. Now people aren't just winding up in my bed. Woke up, the bed was dry. Don't even have to check now. Now you just wake up, you assume the bed is dry. That is just, those are some of the gifts of recovery. And then coming here, and this would have scared the hell out, the shit out of me. Thank you, Krista. Gotcha, go. This would have scared the heck out of me. You know what? Now, tapped into a power greater than myself, I can stand here and be an idiot. And you all have to take it because you're at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you cannot work out. And the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. But the only requirement for recovery, goddammit, do the steps, work the program. So to the newcomers, we didn't welcome the newcomers. If you're here and you're feeling afraid, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're here and you don't know if this is going to work for you, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're here and you think your life is over, goddammit, welcome. And if you are here and you're thinking this is some bullshit right here, can we give those newcomers a round of applause? Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And on that note, we're going to be opening, the next meeting will start at 11, wait for the ring, 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 and make your way back here. Find the newcomers, give them love. In fact, give everyone love. It's Easter. There's some people there who are just giving love all over the place. And we're going to... I bet you're going to finish up and pray. Don't be lazy. Step up. Thank you for long. Handing over to Wally to close us off.
Thank you so much, Kanita. Can we just all stand up? We close this meeting with a serenity prayer. If you want to hold hands, you're welcome. And we'll do the we version. Who loves us?
God. Grant us serenity to accept the things that might change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.